It's time for the Fire Drill Podcast, y'all. We have Gwen and Jay in the studio today here to tell you some secrets.
The secrets of rent hacking high cost of living areas. We're going to talk about saving thousands through master tenancy and other methods.
And we brought on an expert, a true mustachian born and bred. Let's go.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's podcast, where I have my co-host, Jay.
Hey.
And we have a very special guest who wishes to be mostly anonymous, so we're going to call her M, like James Bond-esque name. So thanks for appearing on the show today. We really appreciate you coming out.
Of course.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Hi, everyone. I am late 20s mustachian-esque person, and I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And then about a decade ago, moved to West Coast and have been here ever since. So that's always an issue with cost of living, but it's also a really good place to live if you want to make higher income as well. So I've been able to kind of find a lot of mustachian hacks to make it work and just kind of live in the dream out here. And hopefully I'll hit FIRE in about 8 or so years.
When did you first discover Mr. Mustache, Mr. Money Mustache, and how long have you been working towards FIRE already?
Yeah, I've been working towards FIRE for about 8 years. I had a coworker, my very first job out of grad school. He wasn't my boss, but he kind of became my boss. And we were just talking one day, and he said that his friend just started a blog. He grew up with this guy named Pete, and he thought it was really cool. And he knew that I biked to work and everything, and he thought it would kind of be right up my alley. So this was back in like 2010, and he said I should check it out. And the blog was, I don't know, completely different back then and kind of absolutely nothing. But I thought it was really great. And it was kind of like, these are my people. I've been doing all of this. I didn't know there was kind of other people that did it. And I didn't really know there was like a name for it and a way to connect with people and kind of keep on track with each other. So that's kind of how I randomly stumbled into it at the very infancy, and I've been following it ever since.
Wow. So you're kind of like OG mustachian. You're a mustachian before there were such a thing as a mustachian.
Well, no, I think it's just a thing. But then when he started the blog, we kind of, everyone who is like that naturally, including myself, all kind of had a community and a word to call themselves as well.
So wait, Mr. Money Mustache, childhood friend, was your boss?
Yeah. Well, he's my old boss from a really long time ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they grew up together. They went to middle school together or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So we were actually laughing before the call. If you had a test, how mustachian are you? I think, you would be high up on the list. Would you want to tell us a little bit about your phone and how you hack that?
Yeah. So we just spent 5 minutes trying to put this call together because I don't have a Skype account and I don't have a regular phone either. I have a flip phone. So it was a little troublesome, but they figured it out. So that's one of the pros and cons, I think, of my current lifestyle. I wouldn't call myself very extreme. I kind of just do what I like, but it just happens that the things that I enjoy don't really cost money. And I also just don't like fancy things. It's not that I don't like them. I actively kind of hate them. I think it stems from growing up in a non very affluent part of the world where no one really had very much stuff. And if you were kind of flashy about it, you were just kind of seen as a total jerk. And I mean, if you had like, say like grass in your front yard, like people would, I would judge. Like, that's such a waste of water. It's a lot of time and effort. You don't even use your front yard. Like, it's like flashy. You're just wasting a bunch of water. And where I come from, water is a very scarce resource. So I think that kind of made me think that you want things, but if you don't need them, then they're not necessary. I also just really like doing things that are free. So every morning I go on a bike ride and watch the sunrise. And every night I go on a walk and watch the sunset. I really like biking and walking and playing sports and going to the park and going to the library and things that are just, they just happen to not cost money. I think I'm just kind of lucky in the fact that I don't have very expensive taste, I guess, but it's also, it's not something that I really try hard to avoid spending money either. So I wouldn't call myself extreme in that sense, because I kind of just do what I do anyway. But I just happen to like things that don't cost money.
I mean, right on. So, you know, living in a technology mecca where everyone has the latest gadget and everyone's lawns are perfectly manicured with every flower you can imagine, how do you find community with that type of?
Oh, gosh, that's never been an issue. I would say some of my very best friends and people I spend a lot of time with are my next door neighbors. I have 8 on all sides. We're actually very, very close. I'm definitely at the point in my life where I just have like too many friends. Like I don't have enough time to like, I have a spreadsheet of like the people that I really don't live nearby that I really need to make sure I keep up my, you know, my time with, and I spend enough time talking with them and helping each other with issues and planning trips to go see each other.
That's such a great idea. Cause I was thinking about that problem. Like you have friends that you've lost touch with over the years because you've grown apart or you've moved away. And I am horrible at texting people. And even when I do text them, I downloaded the GIF keyboard. I wrote about it on my blog, partly because I need to put more emotion in my text messages. Like I don't do exclamation points. People are like, oh, are you excited to see me? I can't tell. So
yes.
For me, like, I mean, I don't know if I'd ever do a spreadsheet, but like the idea of keeping an organized list of people that you want to touch with is pretty good.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think it's weird myself, but you know, I kind of keep a spreadsheet for everything, and I like, you know, just keeping myself accountable, and I really like to make sure that I'm you know, physically talking with them on the phone instead of just, you know, a text or two.
Totally. So talk to us about your accommodations in this high cost of living technology mecca. What kind of accommodations do you have? Do you have like a nice apartment or where do you live in?
I live in a trailer park currently, and it is awesome. It is fantastic. It's everything I need, nothing I don't. It's in a great, great neighborhood. It's super safe. It's super cheap. It's super great. I love everything about it, honestly. But before that, I was living, you know, the West Coast lifestyle for almost a decade as well. And I don't think I ever paid more than $750 in rent. It's just, there's, you know, I could have spent thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on an apartment every month. Or you can choose not to do that. And it's more difficult, obviously, living in a high cost of living area and finding cheaper housing. And it, you know, it's a lot of effort, but monetarily, I think it's completely worth it.
No, let's frame this for people before we get into the strategies, because I definitely, I totally agree with you there. When we met, I was paying $2,600 a month for my apartment. Now, some of you are probably like falling on the floor thinking about that number.
That's
but
ridiculous.
I actually paid $2,600. It was tiny, no AC, like barely any windows. I'm saying gross. And then I met Em, and she told me that she lives in a trailer. And I hadn't known anyone that had lived in a trailer before. And I was curious about it. So I went over and saw it. And it made my apartment look like a cave.
I've totally lived in a trailer, by the way.
You lived in a trailer?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I've never seen one before. This thing was, like, luxurious.
Except mine costs, like, $200 a month for a room. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, yeah. When people say trailer park, they usually they have a negative reaction, as I did before. But it just happened to work out this way. But, yeah, you know, it's a really nice double wide. There's not, like, granite countertops or anything. But, you know, it has definitely everything we need and no extra stuff that we don't. So, We really like it. But yeah, so before I was kind of just, you know, just living the, you know, single, no kid, no pet life, and just hopping around to the cheapest place I could just sleep at night, because I would just spend all day either outside or at work. And there really wasn't a need to spend a lot of money on something like that. And then when we moved to an even higher cost of living area, then the next thing that we were able to do was basically just set up what I did is I set up a Craigslist alert for any 3-bedroom or larger place under $2,500. They weren't very frequent, and I would go over it like 30 seconds after it was posted. And I would basically, you know, check it out, make sure it wasn't completely insane. And then I would sign the lease with the master tenant. And then you can rent out the other rooms. So depending on how large it is, if you got like a 4-bedroom, say you would just live in a master and you could have, you know, whatever you wanted, your boyfriend or girlfriend or cats or whatever, like you're the master tenant, you make the rules. And then you say, you know, room for rent in this nice house, there's 2 cats, you know, I live in the master with my boyfriend, like, you know, here's the deal. That's much easier than trying to say like, oh, hey, I want to rent out a room in a house, but I have a boyfriend and 2 cats and a ferret. Like, it's just not going to work. So kind of being in charge and taking all the responsibility and then really just, you know, renting out the rest has worked really well for me in the past. And just depending on where the laws are in your area, it's actually crazy, but you can, in certain areas, you can rent out the extra rooms for up to the full price of the entire apartment or house. So, and that's just like through a single landlord, not through like an apartment complex or something where you usually just have to co-sign on the lease. But if you find a landlord who would rather deal with 1 person than 5, and most likely they would like to do that, you take full responsibility, you put the full deposit in. I mean, I did, you know, I take out the trash every day. I would clean the entire house. Like I would do all the landscaping. Like I have a lot of more responsibilities, but then I was also in charge. And then you can kind of just make the rules. And then that gave us a lot of flexibility for a lot of years as well.
That's genius. For real though.
Mic dropped, except I'm not going to drop it because I just bought it.
Yeah. So we moved to the Bay Area and we were living, and we definitely could have, where we were living, we could have rented out all the other rooms for market rate, but I was just living with my friends. So I wasn't charging them a ton, but I was still only paying like $500, $600 a month for, and that included, you know, me and my boyfriend and the pets, like, and, you know, everything per month and utilities and everything. And I was just like, I pay all the utilities. Like, I don't want to like have someone say, well, you owe $822.44 this month. Like, that's just stupid. I'll say like, it's 800, you know, pay me monthly and don't worry about utilities or anything like that. It's all included. And that seemed to work out well as well.
So is this a California specific thing or is it a statewide? Like, what is this?
So it depends on the county. So there's definitely different. So I've lived all up and down California, San Diego, LA, Bay Area. I haven't lived North Bay Area, but depending on the county, the laws are basically different. The master tenant laws are pretty standard throughout California, that if you're the master tenant, you can rent out the rooms, but the price you can rent them out for depends on the county. So for example, in San Francisco, if you're in a rent controlled apartment, you can only rent out the apartments you divide it by square footage. So say it's a two bed, two bath apartment and you're on rent control and it's $2,000 a month. Even if you're the master tenant or not, each person pays $1,000 for those bedrooms. Like,
wow. Okay. So I think if you're listening right now and you are renting and you are willing to live with other people, this is the key. You'd have to figure out if it's applicable in your state and then county.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rules for my area, and I don't think we have any sort of master tenancy laws at all.
Yeah, and it's something to look into, but you know, that was just something that I happened to stumble upon. But note that the rules can definitely change by county or by state and everything like that. But that just happened to be what worked for us.
It looks like other states have it too, maybe Delaware. But that's amazing. So, okay, the first step, you need to get somebody who's going to agree to this situation and rent it to 1 person. And I'm assuming the benefit for them is that you're on the hook for the whole lease. You'll find them the people. They don't have to worry about it. You'll handle utilities.
Sure. Most landlords don't want to deal with, you know, renting out each room individually. And I found zero problem with just, you know, putting in an extra deposit saying, here's all. And the other thing I've done too is a lot of these landlords are, you know, it's not their favorite thing to do and they don't really like being a landlord. So if you can say, you know, for $100 extra a month off rent, I will do X, Y, and Z. I even, you know, came to an agreement with one landlord where if anything were to have broken, I would be financially responsible for it, except, you know, the roof and a couple other things. And then he knocked $400 off the rent just because it was complete peace of mind. Like nothing, I would never call him for, you know, a plumbing problem or anything like that. And it works for me because we definitely did have $400 worth of issues per month. So, you know, just negotiating with, you know, individual landlords, they're usually very open to negotiation. You just kind of have to put it on the table. Now, if you're like within a larger apartment complex or something, obviously that's, you're not going to have as much flexibility there, which is one of the reasons that I really don't like renting from them. I just haven't had good experiences.
As a landlord myself, I would have to say that if somebody said to me, I will never call you unless something terribly wrong happened to the house, would you give me a discount? I'd say, absolutely, let's do it. Because that would be amazing. You know, because so much of the stuff is, as a landlord is so little, like my sink is clogged or the toilet's clogged, you know, like it's tiny little stuff and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it's obnoxious for them. And it's obnoxious for the renter because then they're waiting on the landlord and then the landlord has to call a plumber. It's like, what? Like, I've actually learned a lot about plumbing throughout this process as well. So I can, you know, I can pretty much fix anything now, which is another side bonus.
You want to come over and help me redo my bathroom? I've got one that needs to be redone.
She's like, no, I don't.
But yeah.
She's like, thanks, but no thanks.
It's a hard
But yeah, and like you said before, the, you know, do you want to live with roommates? Like, no, I don't want to, like, no, I didn't want to live with roommates. Like, I'd rather have my own place. But like, financially, like, would it have been worth it to pay $2,600 instead of $500? Like, absolutely not. And especially where I live, like I said, like, my goal is to be outside when the sun's out. And then, you know, when the sun's down, then basically sleep, right? So it just kind of doesn't make sense to pay a ton of money for a space that I don't really use anyway.
Right, totally. So that's amazing. You saved probably thousands over the course of years doing that. You mentioned before that you're currently living in a trailer, and that's another great way to hack high cost of living housing. First of all, how did you even find out that that was a thing to do? And tell us the steps involved.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I mentioned before, like, this is the only trailer park probably in the entire world I would ever live in. I'll just preface it with that. But I think that the long story short is just do your research. And it's time consuming and it's definitely not easy. But that it's kind of what worked for me. So I grew up in an area where there were a lot of trailer parks and they were places that if you went there at night, you would probably die. So that was kind of how I came into this. When I moved to this area and, you know, you look on realtor.com and you're like, oh, look, there's houses for $3 million. I could never afford that. And then you see a house for $300,000. You're like, oh, what's that? And you click on it and it looks nice. Because like you said, like double wides nowadays, you know, they ain't what they used to be. And then like, oh, it's, you know, it's a trailer park. Haha. Like, you know, that would never happen. Like, and then, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I was kind of like, well, you know, that might make sense. So I started looking into it and there's about 9 trailer parks in my area. And note, there are trailer parks in San Diego, in Los Angeles, on the beach in Malibu, in the Bay Area, like in Sacramento, like everywhere. Like they exist even if you don't think they actually do. And the thing is, usually not only are the trailers, you know, sometimes old and pretty crappy. But then there's basically an HOA fee that you pay monthly because you own the structure, but not the land. And a lot of the fees they vary a lot. So, you know, the fee for a trailer park where I grew up would probably be, you know, $180 or something a month for the HOA fee. And that includes, you know, like trash and water and the pool and the community center and stuff like that. But it's definitely, you know, higher than it would be if you just owned a house outright and didn't have an HOA fee. And then the ones in this area, that, you know, they're anywhere from $500 to $2,000 a month just for the HOA fee. And I was pretty lucky to be able to find one that was very close to the things that I wanted and needed. And there was a really old trailer for sale that has not been updated. The floors are awful. The carpet was just shot. Like there's nothing like nice about it. And I actually hated it at first. And I was like, oh, it's awful. And I thought about it. And I was like, you know, this could really work. You basically go through the whole the whole loan process and everything. I had to put down, I think, 40%. And then I have had a mortgage for the rest. And then you go through closing, you need an inspection. It's pretty similar to a regular house. But I've had it for a couple years now, and it was absolutely the best decision I've ever made.
Wow. So I think we've talked before about some of the downsides in terms of the specific ability to get financing for a trailer. Also, you need to presently live in it. You can't rent it out. Can you tell us some of the caveats to owning a trailer?
It depends on the park. Every park has different rules, just like every apartment complex will have different rules. And it really depends. In the most case, yeah, you can't just, you know, rent it out like a rental property. And I'd say that, you know, the biggest issue is basically that HOA fee. So it's just one of those things where you kind of have to take a gamble at a certain point. What really made the decision solidify for me was I want to stay here as long as I can. I'm not just going to say I fire in 8 years or something. I don't think I'm going to move back to where I grew up and live in the middle of nowhere and things like that. I really like it out here. So if I wanted to have some sort of any long-term solution, this would be it. If it doesn't work out, you know, it doesn't work out, and I lose some money, and it was, you know, a fun try. But so far it's worked out pretty well. And the main reason that, you know, buying anything is really you want to be able to be there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years in order for it to make sense, or else it would just completely be master tenanting still.
Yeah. Wow. So the financing, I think it's not the 3.75% that we may be able to get right now. It's a little bit higher.
I think mine's like 4.15. This is a kind of a controversial fashion thing, but I just threw an extra, like, I don't know, $40,000 at my mortgage. 4.1 interest rate, people would probably be like, that's stupid. You can get a lot more in the stock market. Yeah, but I have so much money in the stock market. I kind of just want to diversify a little bit. So that's kind of a little bit of a diversification for me. I think it's like a 20-year loan. But I'll probably pay it off next year.
I love that. So much money in the stock market. # first world mustachian problems.
Right? That's what I was talking
about.
So I guess, like, you know, while we're going down this path, I'll take there. Because I don't know what the answer is myself. So right now, the Bay Area is so expensive. People that are workers, like, they're cafeteria workers at some of these companies, or, you know, service or whatever, they can't afford to live there. Is it bad that people like us are snatching up affordable housing opportunity in these places? Is it, like, morally bad?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say yes. For two reasons, I would say yes, but then for one reason, I would say no. So, I have an insane income. I had a ton of savings that I was able to plop into the down payment on this. This is not affordable housing. And a normal person working at a cafeteria would never be able to meet the income requirements of this park, or that down payment, or be able to, you know, consistently make the payments going forward if it were to balloon. So I didn't take this away from someone that is super, super low income, because they would not have qualified via the park income rule. And the fact that there is, you know, you have to have basically a 6-figure income to be able to live in the park, that is insane. That is absolutely insane. But I didn't take this away from someone who wouldn't have qualified. I barely qualified. I was actually declined the first time based on my income and savings. And I had to put more down to be able to satisfy, you know, to be able to, you know, basically be accepted. So I'm basically on, like, the lowest rung of the ladder of who would have been accepted in Spark. However, the fact that there is, you know, we can get into a philosophical discussion and political discussion, but Prop 13 was one of the worst things that ever happened to California in terms of taxes and in terms of incentives for not building more housing. And the fact is, more housing has not been built in this area specifically, but also throughout California because of that. Because basically they get a lot more taxes and money and revenue through building offices, not residential areas. So, you know, I think that's a huge problem. And if I didn't have the amazing job that I have specifically right here in this area, I would not be here. However, this is where the job took me. I don't agree with that. I personally think that our company should, you know, be spread out more than just consolidating in this one area. But, you know, that's not my call. So I'm kind of just a byproduct of that. The other people are also a byproduct of that. And I would love for that not to have happened. But I did not make that decision. So I'm just trying to do the best for me based on my situation. And I just think that the situation is crappy, you know, for a lot of people, especially the lower income people. And there are, you know, initiatives for actual affordable housing, which I would not consider this to be, just based on, you know, the income requirements and things that you have to get it. But when they build new apartments and when they build new condos, they set aside a 15 to 20% for actual affordable housing that people with lower incomes can apply for. They're called BMR units, below market rate units. And that's actually, you know, one of the many, many things that the cities and counties do. But yeah, you know, if it were up to me, I would like to not consolidate a ton of jobs in a place that has no housing. I think that inherently doesn't make a lot of sense. But at the same time, you know, I make a lot more here. The cost of living is higher. There are ways to, you know, mitigate that if you work on it. But if I were to move somewhere else, I just don't think that would make sense for me right now.
Right.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I'm sorry to throw a curveball at you, but I guess as Mustachians, or I guess as people who are pursuing early retirement, we're going to put ourselves in a position to have a lot more savings than the average person and a lot more privilege that comes with that. So it's interesting to think about how everyone else too. But at the same time, it's deserved. I mean, yeah. You have a flip phone, you're biking to work. It's not like you're being wasteful at all with your spending.
Yeah, like you said, you know, there's definitely part of it that's a choice and there's part of it that isn't. And the parts that are a choice, you know, I work hard on and I do choose those things. But I also realize that I'm very privileged as well. So there's, you know, I'm on track to hit 500 hours of volunteering this year, which is just another thing that I tried to do to basically be involved in my community and help. It's basically with lower income kids at schools in my city. So just, you know, learning about that and seeing, meeting their parents, and actually a lot of them live in the park. So currently, the park I live in, like, those are the income requirements now. But if people have been living here for 30 years, like, yeah, that is affordable housing, absolutely. So it you know, it depends, right? Like, at what point did you come here? And if you've been here for a while, you know, what else is happening? They also passed more of like they're passing more like rent control-ish laws, or at least they're, you know, introducing them as well. And as an economist, I'm not going to say that those are, you know, economically the best things in the world. But when you have such a housing shortage and you're just adding so many jobs, you know, something's definitely got to give. So I'm becoming very active in my community and really trying to understand more about what's happening and help out where I can. And, you know, it's not something that's going to be solved overnight. And, but I also don't, you know, personally take blame for what happened because it wasn't my decision as well.
Right. Totally.
So, Em, what would you do in your wildest dreams? If you could pick anything in the world to do, what would it be?
Well, unlike most Mustachians, I'm pretty travel adverse. So I've thought about this for a really long time. If I had one wish or dream or something that could come true, it would definitely be teleportation. And then I could see all my friends and family without having to just call them on the phone or take a plane ride, which I just absolutely hate. That would be my best dream, is just, you know, spending a whole day with all the people I really care about. But they all live, like, literally every single one of them lives in a different state or a different country. So being able to just instantly hang out with all of them for a day, I think would be the best thing ever. And I'm hoping that, you know, these tech companies can get on it and invent teleportation pretty soon.
Yeah, get on it.
That would be really great. What?
I said, get on it, Elon.
We'll see if that works. But that would definitely be my dream, is just yeah, hanging out with all the people that I really care about for a day and eating lots of really good food. If I could just eat whatever I wanted and not have any health repercussions, that would be like super sweet too.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I love it. So since you don't have a blog, if people wanted to ask you a question or comment on it, they're just going to leave a comment on the page on the blog for it, and you can respond from there. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So, in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.